Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello, and welcome to the weekly podcast for the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so glad that you took the time to download us and you're taking the time to listen. We try to bring you every week leaders in sports medicine, exercise science. Those people have a passion. They have a passion for it. Have a wonderful story to tell. And this week is no exception. We have Dr. Walt Thompson with us. Welcome to the podcast, Walt.
Thanks, Tim. Thank you very much.
And let me tell the audience a little bit about you. Dr. Thompson is a Regents Professor of Exercise Science at Georgia State University, and that's a big deal when you're a Regents Professor. He is a Fellow of the American College of Sports Medicine and a Fellow of the American Association of Cardiovascular and Pulmonary Rehabilitation, and has many other award and honorary titles. He had got his PhD originally from Ohio State University, so he's a Buckeye. And my wife is a Buckeye, and so we have some connections there as well. One of Dr. Thompson's primary research emphasis is in youth sports, but more importantly has been the service that he's done for the exercise science community, the profession itself. He, in particular, has been the editor of the 8th edition of the American College of Sports Medicine Guidelines for Exercise Testing and Prescription, and we actually refer to that in the business as the Bible. That is what you use to do all your fitness prescriptions. And more recently, he's been the board chair for the advisory board for the American Fitness Index. And that's where we're going to start today. So, Walt, what is this American Fitness Index?
Well, thanks, Tim. And then first let me say what a privilege it is to be on this podcast with both you and for the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance.
Thanks, Walt.
I had a chance to look over the other podcast people, and I'm just honored to be among that group. I just recently listened to Charlie Kimball's podcast, which is extraordinarily interesting from, I would say, a consumer's perspective on the use of sports medicine. Of course, last week I listened to both yours and my mentor in absentia, Ed Howley, who's been around for a long time. So it's certainly a privilege to be among those that you've invited to be on this podcast.
Well, thanks, Walt. Now I'm blushing.
I can see that.
But tell us about this American Fitness Index.
Well, the American Fitness Index is interesting. We first got funding from the WellPoint Foundation back in 2006 to 2007 to put together an index of the 50 most populated cities across the country. And we took really 2007 to pilot the program to determine what kind of data points we wanted to look at to develop a composite score. And we have an extraordinary advisory committee. It's really a who's who among folks that are interested in physical activity and the built environment. And I would urge your listeners to go to the American Fitness Index website. It's AmericanFitnessIndex.org.
Okay. And we'll put that on our show notes.
Great. And take a look at who has been involved since 2007 on the advisory committee. Again, it is really a who's who among those of us who are interested in physical activity and the built environment. So when we built this American Fitness Index in 2007, the first full report, by the way, was in 2008, and we've done a full report every year since, ranks the top 50 cities in really two different categories. One we call personal health indicators, and the other, the second, is called the community or environmental indicators. So the first, the personal health indicators, are behaviors that you and I might exhibit. It would be things like whether we exercise and how much we exercise, what our body composition relative to obesity is, whether or not we have asthma or coronary artery disease or diabetes, you know, those kinds of things that you and I can kind of control, those personal health indicators. And the other aspect of this is what we call community environmental indicators, or community and environmental indicators, which are which support physical activity. So we're talking about the built environment, the acres of parkland per capita, the number of farmers market per capita, mm-hmm. whether or not people use public transportation or use a bicycle to go back and forth to work. And we even talk about things like baseball diamonds, dog parks, playgrounds, golf courses, swimming pools, tennis courts, those kinds of things. Things that support the behavior that you and I can exhibit, either taking advantage of the built environment or not taking advantage of the built environment.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you mean by built environment? Let's just define that for our folks here.
Well, I live in Atlanta,
right?
So I'm most familiar with what happens here in Atlanta. And if you've ever walked the streets of Atlanta, you know that if two people were walking side by side, there's no room for a third person.
Right.
So if you can imagine, if you wanted to go for a jog mm-hmm. in downtown Atlanta, you are dodging cars mm-hmm. Or dodging people on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
So it's not really supportive of physical activity, and you know, that's why we don't rate really high in the American Fitness Index. And the other thing that we don't have in Atlanta, and this is true of a number of cities, and a number of cities there in Texas as well, is that we don't have a lot of parks for people to go and exercise in.
Right.
And the parks that we do have in downtown Atlanta, well, quite frankly, you don't want to be there after dark. So
right.
Bad things happen. But places that are high on the list, like Minneapolis and Washington, D.C., they have a higher number of parks or acres of parkland per capita, which really supports physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever been in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. Around the mall at noontime. There's literally no place for people who want to go for a casual stroll because there's so many people out there exercising.
You'll get run over really quickly.
Exactly, yes. And that's why Washington, D.C. is perennially, since 2008, our first report, been high up on the list of, in fact, for the past 4 years, it's been number one. Just recently, last year, replaced by Minneapolis as the number one city.
Hmm. So this index, how can people use this?
Well, there's two ways, Tim, to use the index. If you live in one of the 50 most populated cities, you can see how the personal health indicators fall out, and also how the local community supports physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't fall into one of those 50 most populated cities, we've also developed a way for you to predict. It's called your place among the American Fitness Index. And we call it My AFI, My American Fitness Index. And it allows you to plug in whatever data are available to you, and it might be things like smoking behaviors and things like that, and develop your own index.
So you get a chance to find out where you live, how it ranks against those top 50.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And we have had people, believe it or not, we've had folks that are about to retire call us and say, look, you know, I want to move someplace where I'm going to remain healthy and the environment helps me remain healthy. Where should I move? And we typically try not to give specific advice,
right.
But you know, we tell them, you know, that, well, in this particular city, they spend more money on parkland than in another city.
Yeah. Now, you guys. Well, before we go away from that, you know, I know that some states will play up how healthy they are. You see Colorado in particular talk about how healthy the people are and how healthy the environment is and so forth as a kind of inducement to get people to move there and come there. Do you see the American Fitness Index being used like that? I mean, you talk about people now calling you, asking you for advice as to where to move.
Well, it is being used like that.
It is already being used like that.
It's being used like that. And I should tell you, the number 50 city on our list since 2008 has been Oklahoma City.
Really?
Exactly, and that which is surprising to most folks.
Mm-hmm.
But the next phase of the American Fitness Index, one that we're working on right now in both Oklahoma City and in Indianapolis, the home of the American College of Sports Medicine, which also falls low on the list, we have been invited by the mayor's office to come in and consult with them and talk with them about how they can improve the American Fitness Index in their city.
Yeah.
So we've actually visited with the mayors of both of those cities and the leadership within those cities. One example I can give you, when we were in Oklahoma City talking to the mayor there, and the mayor there, by the way, when he was first elected the mayor, he was considered at least overweight, if not obese.
Hmm.
And he's lost some 150 pounds, and now he's an exercise fanatic.
Wow.
And wants the rest of his city to do the same thing. So he's really interested in exercise and how he and his administration can help support exercise.
Yeah.
So one of the minor adjustments that we talked with them about the last time we were there was they were building this really nice park in the center of town, and I simply asked a question, on Saturday morning, do you have any kind of farmer's market that comes in? And they were surprised I asked the question, because they said, well, once you get out in the suburbs, everybody farms.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, what about inside the city? You know, why don't I bring those farmers into the city on a Saturday morning and open up a farmer's market? And I thought that was a brilliant idea. It really wasn't my idea. The cities are doing this all over the country.
Yeah.
But that one minor change, that one suggestion, is going to significantly improve their ranking.
Hmm. Yeah, because those kind of things certainly bring people back to the city core, helps them eat naturally and better. And yeah, so a lot of good positive things there.
Well, it also fulfills this void in downtown areas of these food deserts.
Hmm.
You know, there just isn't available in most of these cities fresh fruits and vegetables, because they simply don't have large grocery stores in downtown areas.
Right. They can get McDonald's, but they can't get fresh fruits and vegetables.
And most folks who live in cities like that will go to the corner market and get their food, or it might be a fast food place, as you suggested.
Yeah.
So we're working with these cities, and again, this is the next phase of the American Fitness Index, where we actually go into the cities and consult with the cities, and the ones that are most interested are the ones that are in the bottom of the rankings.
Yeah.
So we start with Oklahoma City because we were invited by the mayor there, and we started in Indianapolis because the American College of Sports Medicine home base is there.
Right, right. Mm. Interesting. Well, yeah, you know what strikes me is that so oftentimes when we talk to when I talk to people about sports medicine, when they talk about research scientists, they often think about people in their lab maybe testing an athlete or two here and there. But what you're really talking about is almost research science on a macro scale, because what you guys are doing is you're going out and working with large population groups within this larger organization to make change.
Yeah, I think what we're doing is the same thing that you're doing there with Huffines, and some others are across the country, and that is translating science into practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very often I'll hear of these incredible studies that appear in these journals, and then when I go to look at how it was practiced in the cities or in the communities or even on a personal level, sometimes we lose that. But what you're doing at Huffines and what I'm trying to do with the American Fitness Index and others across the country is translating science, getting the science out of the journals and using it in a practical way.
Right. And this is also another example of how a large organization like the American College of Sports Medicine can make a difference. This is a professional society that started to, you know, it was started to influence how sports science was done, but in reality, it's really influencing how the population is active.
That's right, and the American Fitness Index, along with ACSM's Exercises Medicine Initiative, those are the two now signature programs of the American College of Sports Medicine, are doing exactly that, translating science, getting it down to your mom and dad and my dad, who's 81 years old in Florida, and into all of the fitness centers across the country, the commercial clubs, the community-based organizations, really taking that science that's not often translated down to a practical level.
Yeah. I springboard off of that. Let's talk about some of your research interests. I mean, the American Fitness Index is an incredible undertaking, and thank you so much for working on that and shepherding that along. But you've also had some personal research interest, especially with youth sports. I believe you're involved in something in Atlanta called the After School All-Stars.
Yeah, I moved to Atlanta from the University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg, Mississippi in 1994. And Georgia State University is a downtown urban campus. In fact, you could be on our campus and know it or not know it, depending upon the name on the door of a building. But we are an urban campus. And when I came here in 1994, and I was working for the provost at the time, our president always had the same message that we had to improve the urban environment. If you improve the urban environment, we improve the environment for our students, which at that time was about 17,000 undergraduates. Fast forward to 2012, now we're about 32,000 full-time students. So we were mandated to improve the urban environment. So when I got here in 1994, I was really interested in, number one, how I could do that, and then make a long-term impact. Now, a lot of the programs that we start are short-term impacts, and they may have some staying power, may not. But I really was interested in focusing on children, because I knew they had a longer-term impact than adults would. But I was also interested in working with children of low socioeconomic status. These are the kids that come from poor families that, at least traditionally in cities, if you grow up in a poor environment, you typically stayed in that environment. There are obviously exceptions to that, but there's this vicious cycle in cities, not just Atlanta, but all over the country. So in 1994, we started a program called the Inner City Games. It's an interesting concept, but because some people just forget that in 1996 we had this Olympic Games.
Little thing called the Olympics.
Yeah, in 1996. So it was easy. You know, we started this Inner City Games program, kind of a run-up to the Olympic Games, but we didn't realize how successful it was going to be. The Olympic Games came and went, and we stayed with the Inner City Games concept. And in 1998, we had over 20,000 kids involved in a summer tournament-style kind of sport play. So it was hugely successful. But our message really, Tim, wasn't that here's the rules of the game and it's all about competition. It was really more about sportsmanship. And in fact, our mission to the kids was to say no to drugs, gangs, and violence, and yes to hope, learning, and life. But an interesting thing happened in 1998. One of my funders came to me and said, "How do you know you're making a difference?" And I said, "Look, we got 20,000 kids who are hearing the same mantra every day, and it's not about whether they win or lose. It's how they play the game, you know, that same concept." And they said, "Well, no, this guy said, at the end of the summer, they go back into their neighborhoods, they go back into their schools, they're under the same influences, and you have no influence over them." I said, "You know what, you're absolutely right." So he suggested that we have a longer-term impact on these kids. Well, about that same time, in December of 1998, I was sitting in my office, and I was, like other scientists, I had my white lab coat on, and I was
smoking a pipe with a tweed jacket on.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, minding my own business. You know, we had this little summer program going. But then I got this phone call, and it was from a guy whose name you might recognize. It was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, if you're sitting in your office relaxing on a Friday afternoon in December, and somebody calls you and identifies himself as Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, you're trying to figure out which of your buddies is
it's pulling the trigger on you.
Exactly.
I could think of a few that would be appropriate for that.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah. So finally he convinced me that it was, in fact, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he wanted to he was already starting after-school programs in East L.A., and he wanted to expand, as Arnold does. You know, Arnold, it's not just about one small community. When Arnold gets involved in something, it's worldwide.
Right.
So he said, "Well, I want to expand my program to Atlanta. I know how successful your summer programs have been, but we want to have a long-term impact on these kids, and we want to start an after-school program. And I said, well, Mr. Schwarzenegger, I did call him Mr. Schwarzenegger. you'll have to call the president of the university, because this program that you're describing is much bigger than me. This is an institutional decision.
Yeah.
So Arnold, in his direct way, says, what's his number? So I gave him the number of our president, Carl Patton, and 30 minutes later, Carl called me and said that you'll never guess who called me.
And that's when you said, oh, yes, I can, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we talked about it for about a minute and a half, and I said, well, Dr. Patton, is this something that we should do? And he said, no, Walt, and, this is now going back to 1998, says, no, Walt, this is something we must do.
Mm.
Not because Arnold Schwarzenegger called him.
Yeah.
You know, Carl, you know, he gets phone calls from a lot of famous people. But it was the right thing to do.
Right.
So we abruptly stopped our summer program, which had been wildly successful, and started up a program that today is called the After School All-Stars.
Mm. Wow.
We started with one small $150,000 grant to start up a program in one school, and fast forward to today, 2012, now, 12 years later, our support is about $2.5 million,
Wow.
And we have 15 independent sites.
Wow.
And our mission is still the same. It's say no to drugs, gangs, and violence, and say yes to hope, learning, and life. But we've created now this comprehensive after-school program that includes structured physical activity. It includes nutrition programs. We developed this program, a nutrition program called Project CHEW, Choosing Health, Experiencing Wellness.
Oh, great acronym.
Which is it's an organic garden concept, but the kids not only grow the vegetables, but bring them in to the school and make things in the after-school program. And that's, of course, homework assistance and tutoring and that sort of thing. The important thing about physical activity, however, is in the state of Georgia, there is no physical education requirement past the fifth grade.
None, really?
Zero.
Wow.
So when a kid leaves the fifth grade, leaves elementary school, there is one unit of health or physical education required for high school graduation. One unit.
And that's like one semester.
One semester. Mm-hmm. And the football players don't have to take it. Cheerleaders don't have to take it. If you're in a band, you don't have to take it. All these exemptions from this even one unit of health and physical education. Now, couch that in terms of what is the requirement of physical education for elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
So I did this very unscientific study about physical education. I called my daughter, who is a second grade school teacher, and I said to her, how much physical education do your kids get? And she said, without hesitating, 30 minutes. I said, wow, that's great, 30 minutes. And she said, a week.
Wow.
I said, 30 minutes a week? She said, yep, and we don't even get recess anymore.
Oh, wow.
So I said, these kids then, we're in a state where there is a physical education requirement up to the fifth grade. You're telling me they get 30 minutes a week?
Wow.
And she said, that's exactly what they get.
I have a hard time imagining that, much less imagining a classroom of second graders that don't get recess.
No, it's kindergarten through the fifth grade.
Wow.
They just don't get recess. They don't get physical education. It's always math. Reading, English language, arts, and that sort of thing.
Wow. I would have gone nuts as a kid.
Yeah, well, me too. I remember the daily physical education that we had, and dressing out and uniforms and stuff like that. It doesn't happen anymore.
I'd prefer to forget that part, but no, the activity part's the fun part, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so I decided when we started this after-school program, realizing that these kids are not getting any physical activity, is to make a part, a very important part of the after-school program, some form of physical activity.
Yeah.
And, today, 2012, every one of my sites is required to have 30 minutes of physical activity, some sort of physical activity. And it doesn't matter what kind. It could be step class. It could be, we like to use the HOP sports training system.
Mm.
Which is, I would really urge folks to take a look at that, because it's one of these things that's age appropriate, it's culturally relevant, and our kids at least love it.
Mm. Wow.
So that's what, in my own little way, trying to increase the physical activity standards among kids living in the inner city.
Well, I would say that's not a little way. What you didn't tell us, how many kids do you have in your 15 sites now?
We have an average daily attendance of over 2,500.
Wow. So over 2,500 kids a day that you're affecting with that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're not done yet.
So what does the future hold for it?
Tim, that depends on funding. I'm very careful about expanding.
Mm.
Because I remember back in 1999 when I went to King Middle School, Martin Luther King Jr. Middle School, for the first time, and I remember this kid tugging on my shirt sleeve, and he says, "Mister, how long are you going to be here?" And I was just taken aback, and I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He says, "Well," he went on to explain that they have a lot of people who come in and want to do programs, but they don't stay.
Right.
You know, they come in, they it's kind of a one hit thing. They realize that middle school is not the fun little kids that are playing in elementary school. And they come in and they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we started in King Middle School in 1999. We're still there. So our expansion is very careful. It depends on whether I've got sustained funding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've been very, very, very fortunate. Mm-hmm. And this year alone, in the state of Georgia, like most states, we're strapped for cash. The state has increased our support from $700,000 last year to $950,000.
Wow, good for you.
And we've got some influential philanthropic family foundations that are supporting us as well.
So if that young middle schooler were to find you now, you could safely say that we've stayed, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I have had kids come back and be counselors in our summer programs. And I remember just last summer, we took a group of kids up to do some mountain biking. We took the Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle and the Falcons General Manager Thomas Dimitrov.
Mm.
Both of them are enthusiastic mountain bikers. We took about 25 kids from the inner city up to Gainesville, Georgia, up in the mountains. And there was this older kid there, and I thought that I had recognized him, but I couldn't place him. So I went up and introduced myself to him. He was one of our counselors.
Oh, cool.
And I said, "You know, I recognize you." He said, "Well, you should, because I was in the Brown Middle School After School All-Stars program when I was in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade."
Wow.
And I said, "Well, what are you doing now?" He says, "Well, I'm in college. I'm about to graduate."
Wow.
And you get the shivers because you get the chill bumps because you know that. What would have happened if it wasn't for the program? I don't know. He may have gone on to college. My guess is that he probably wouldn't have.
Wow. Well, congratulations, Walt. That's just an amazing service, I guess, to all of us, and so thank you for that.
Well, let me tell you, it's not just me. I have an incredible full-time staff of 9 people who are all dedicated to kids, and I've got a part-time staff of almost 600 that work with these kids every day.
And you're humble as well. The audience can tell. Really cool.
Well, thanks for that. I'm not really humble. You can just ask my wife about that. but we have developed this successful after-school All-Stars program in the city of Atlanta. We're very proud of it. And we're more proud when kids like this guy comes up to me and say, "You know, it was because of you guys that I went on to college, and I'll be successful one day."
Yeah, well, and you know that for our listening audience, that's a really nice story to show. Behind the scenes, a big time effort like this is trying to actually affect the lives of students when our other systems kind of fall apart and don't deal with the things that they need to deal with. So, Walt, thanks for that. We're running short on time here, and I want to know if you want to follow that up with your take-home message. What would you like the audience to remember from today?
Yeah, well, thanks, Tim. And again, thanks to Huffines for allowing me to spend some time with you today. I think for me the most important take-home message is if you're a research scientist, remember that your results of whatever experiment you're doing can significantly impact the lives of folks out there in the street. And please don't ever forget that the journal entry is not the end of the game. Mm. The end of the game is translating your science into some kind of practical way for people to increase their physical activity and improve their health.
Because if we don't, it doesn't make any difference, does it?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, Walt, thank you again for taking the time today to be
with
us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And thank you all for listening today. We do have a podcast T-shirt question of the day, and the producer just handed it to me. What is the name of Dr. Thompson's after-school program that they work on increasing physical activity? Send us the answer to that question. Be the first one to do that via email, and you will get one of our nifty podcast T-shirts. And that email address is huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. Be the first one. Walt, thank you once again. It's been great talking to you. We're going to have to bring you back on because I didn't even get halfway through my list of questions.
Well, thank you, Tim. I appreciate it very much.
Okay. And to all you, thank you for taking the time to download us and listen. And until next week, we hope you have an active and healthy week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Kelsey Sachs and Cheryl Myrick and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zellner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.